let's get to the first question. We're not doing an opening statement per se, but a general first question, if I may. And it's something that is seldom asked in a Democratic primary in blue state Maryland, and that is electability. The last time we did a Democratic primary gubernatorial debate here was 20 years ago. In that race, Paris Glendening, of course, was elected governor, but in November, only after a recount and only by 6,000 votes. So the question I have in this race that's becoming more negative than the race 20 years ago, do Democratic primary voters need to think about electability in the fall? If so, Mr. Brown, first, what makes you more electable than your opponents?
Well, thank you, Jeff. Let me thank you, MPT, WBAL, and certainly the League of Women Voters. I want to thank all of you in the audience this night and those who are listening and watching around the state. It's a pleasure to be here. Look, voters are going to look at candidates both in the general election and in 22 days in the primary election, and they're going to look at experience and record. They're going to evaluate judgment and character. I'm excited to be running for governor because I think Maryland's a great state. And over the during the last 8 years as lieutenant governor, I've had the opportunity to serve you as well as 8 years before that as a member of the Maryland's General Assembly and 30 years of experience in both the active and reserve duty. As lieutenant governor, I focused on the base realignment and closure and bringing jobs to Maryland, reducing domestic violence, placing kids in foster care, either reuniting them with their families or placing them for adoption. And what Marylanders are looking for is a candidate who's going to get the job done. Maryland's a great state, but we can be better. We built some of the best in the nation public schools, but not every child's in a blue ribbon school, so we've got work to do. We've driven crime down to levels we haven't seen in three decades, but still, we have work that we need to do. We have one of the strongest economies in the nation, yet there are Marylanders still who are unemployed, underemployed, facing the threat or reality of foreclosure. With you together, we'll build a better Maryland. I look forward to doing that with you as we build a better Maryland for more Marylanders.
Next to Delegate Bazier.
Thank you, Jeff, and to all the audience here tonight. Appreciate it very much, and the viewers at home as well. Some people run for governor because they want the job. I'm running for governor because I want to do the job. I know how to bring people together to get big things done. My Democratic values come from my family. I grew up in a house where my father was a United Auto worker for 32 years. And some of the most core convictions I got were on the picket lines with him, watching men and women stand up and fight for what they believe in with incredible courage. And we need that same kind of courage of convictions to tackle the income inequality gap in our state. We have a growing disparity between the haves and have-nots in Maryland. Addressing this wage gap has been a cause of a lifetime for me, and I'll be the governor that gets it done. We're going to turn the minimum wage into a living wage. No one should be living in poverty when they're working 40 hours a week in a job. I want to make sure that we have equal pay for equal work. We can't just celebrate the fact that Maryland pays 85 cents on the dollar. We have to make it dollar for dollar the same. And I have a plan to give middle-class tax cuts to 90% of all families in this state. That's how we pump money back into the economy and keep the jobs coming and growing for the middle class and closing that income inequality gap. It's the biggest issue facing our state, and I look forward to being the governor that will tackle it to get it done.
Mr. Gensler.
Thank you, Jeff, and thank you all for being here tonight. I think it's actually a relevant question even more recently when Bob Ehrlich was able to beat Kathleen Kennedy Townsend. And I think that what we bring to this race is somebody who's actually run governments, who's been elected four times by the people of Maryland, Democrat and Republican. In fact, I was unopposed the last election, and both parties endorsed me in my second election. And that's because people want to look past party. They want to look at what you have done. What is the record? And I have 22 years of seeing problems, seeing things that are unfair, unjust, and fighting relentlessly to get those resolved. And I think that makes me different than my opponents. I'm the only person up here that actually grew up in Maryland. I started working in public service in 1989 before either of my opponents actually stepped foot in Maryland. And I think people, when I go around the state and talk to people, when I knock on doors, and I knocked just last week in Cumberland and Hagerstown, and we've been knocking all over, they don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. They care about the tax burden. They care about the lack of jobs that's been created. They care about the fact that the middle class is being squeezed here in Maryland, that we're 49th in the country in personal income growth, that we've had over 8,000 1,000 small businesses leave the state in the last 8 years, that 46% of the adults in the city right down the street in Baltimore don't have work, that we only have four Fortune 500 companies left. They want somebody who gets the job done, who rolls up his sleeves, and that is what I give to this race.
Let's go to a question from the studio audience. Again, this is undecided voters who were brought to us by the League of Women Voters. And we're going to start with Roberta, who's in the back row, a member of the League, who is so happy I'm coming to her right now. Roberta, do you need the question?
Yes, please. Good evening. Your priorities include well-paying jobs. How will you, as governors, ensure that workers receive wages that will afford them a reasonable livelihood?
And this goes first to Delegate Mazur.
Thank you so much, Roberta, for that being your priority question. I want to make sure, as I mentioned in my opening statement, that we get to a living wage, not just $10.10 an hour, which, by the way, the next governor will be running for re-election before it gets to $10.10 an hour, and she's not going to stand for that. We're going to make sure that we get that wage up to a living wage of $16.70 per hour by 2022. And we're going to index it for inflation because as the cost of living goes up, it eats away the value of that wage. And we did nothing in this last legislative session to address the problem that our tipped wage workers face. Roberta, those people, mostly women and people of color, are making $3.63 an hour. We can't stand for that. I'm going to push their wages up to at least 70% of what our new living wage threshold would be. Now, in Annapolis, you might say, how are you going to get that done when you had a hard time even getting this bare minimum wage passed this year? It's because I put meaningful tax relief on the table for our small businesses who we are asking to pay those higher wages. If we close one loophole that exists that allows a handful of multi-state companies to avoid paying taxes on the money they make in Maryland, make them pay their fair share, we generate $200 million of new revenue that I dedicate to small business tax relief. It's how we can make sure that our workers and our businesses are in an economy that works for them both. Thank you so much for the question, Roberta.
Mr. Gansler.
Thank you, Roberta. As you may recall, when the minimum wage started the discussion, I was the person that led that discussion. I was the first person up here on the stage that called for an increase in minimum wage. And the reason why that was is because if you're making $7.25 an hour and you're working 40 hours a week, you're still below the federal poverty line, and that's not fair. So we called for that, the increase to $10.10, as President Obama had called for in the federal government. But the issue is this. If we don't have jobs, then it doesn't matter what the minimum wage is because people won't be able to go to work. And if we continue to lose our small businesses and tax the people of Maryland to the place where their backs are breaking, then we have no place for them to work. So one of the things that we want to do is tax the multinational corporations. There's a loophole, and I agree with Delegate Mazur. It's exactly a problem that the lieutenant governor's been in for 8 years while this loophole's existed and hasn't closed it. And we can bring up to $200 million by taxing the multinationals, the McDonald's, the Walmarts of the world that do business in here without being taxed. But at the same time, we need to bring jobs back to Maryland. We're now 46th in the country in manufacturing. We have life sciences and cybersecurity, endless jobs that are available here in Maryland. And we're the only state in the country that has NIH, that has the NSA, that has the Cyber Command Center, and has Johns Hopkins, the University of Maryland system. We need to bring jobs here, and then we can pay the workers adequate wages.
Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Roberta. As I stand here this evening, I'm a generation removed from poverty. My father was raised by his grandmother in a single-bedroom home on a dirt floor in Kingston, Jamaica. And he beat the odds. His mother, my grandmother, who was already in this country, brought him this to America. He was the first in our family to get a college education. Education is going to be the best way that we're going to equip Marylanders to rise the ladders of opportunity as we create these ladders of opportunity into the middle class. Education and training. I supported Delegate Mazur, and I'm pleased that Doug Gansler as well supported raising the minimum wage in Maryland. In fact, it was an administration bill. We didn't get everything that we wanted. We did raise from $7.25 to $10.10 an hour. So there's going to be about 500,000 Marylanders who are now going to be raised up out of poverty over the course of the next 2.5 years. It's going to boost about $500 million in our economy, which is actually going to create jobs. That's a good thing. This is a strong economy, but there are still Marylanders who are underpaid and underemployed. So I've got a five-point jobs plan. It starts with investments in infrastructure, big projects like the Purple Line and the Red Line, like the $1.1 billion investment in the Baltimore City schools. But it also includes education and training and guarantees that when we deliver those big projects, they go to Marylanders and not to folks coming over from West Virginia, Pennsylvania, or Delaware. But we've got to educate and train those Marylanders to fill those jobs. My plan also has strategic tax credits for cyber companies, companies in life sciences, so we can upskill our workforce. Everyone will have an opportunity to pursue the American dream as they climb the ladders of opportunity that we create in the Brown-Ullman administration.
Next question, we'll begin with Mr. Gansler on this, and then Mr. Brown and Delegate Mazir. And the question is on the health exchange. Do you support the administration decision to rebuild the health exchange using Connecticut software?
Well, the health exchange, Jeff, is the major difference, I believe, in this election and what has happened and where we're going with it. You know, I chaired President Obama's campaign here in the state of Maryland. Other people went a different direction. I went to the Supreme Court of the United States to uphold the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. I believe health care is a right, and I believe that it was wrong that we're the only country in the nation, in the civilized nation, that didn't provide health care to its citizens. That said, we have given $200 million to the lieutenant governor who, by his own admission, was in charge. This was the one thing that he has been actually managed or has been in charge of or was supposed to be the leader of during his 8 years as lieutenant governor. And as the Washington Post has said, as the Baltimore Sun has said, it was a national embarrassment. We're 45th in the country in enrolling people into health care. And he'll get up here and spin the numbers, and he'll take the Medicaid automatic rollovers and say, well, we've gotten people health care. The fact of the matter is we have hundreds of thousands of people without health care in Maryland, people who can't take their children to get chemotherapy, people whose grandparents can't get access to health care, real people, not to mention the $200 million down the drain. The problem with Connecticut is they once again went into a closed room. No transparency, no competition, and are chasing good money after bad. Neither, even the people in Connecticut say that this won't work. I called for moving to the federal exchange, which works, which had problems at the beginning, and now is 50,000 people a day enrolling, and that's what we need to do.
Mr. Brown.
Good. Thanks, Jeff. I'm not new to health care, and for the last 8 years under the O'Malley-Brown administration, we've expanded access to affordable, quality health care to over 500,000 Marylanders. And when we set out to launch the health benefits exchange, just like when President Obama launched the federal exchange, just like when every state launched their exchange, to tremendous technical challenges, there was nobody more frustrated than me with the troubles that we experienced. And I sincerely regret that any Marylander had difficulties like many did to access affordable quality health care. But that's why we took the actions that we did. We reorganized the leadership at the exchange. We refocused the vendors, including IBM. Some of them were fired from the job. We looked at the resources and the capabilities of the exchange, because the exchange is more than a website, and we plussed up call centers and navigators around the state. And the result, our goal was to enroll 260,000 Marylanders. We enrolled 340,000 Marylanders. The question was asked before about poverty and low wages. Of the 340, about 260,000 are Medicaid recipients. That's America's health insurance for the working poor. That's that single mom who is making minimum wage, who was priced out of the market because her child had a pre-existing condition, was paying $850 a month 6 months ago. Today, she's paying $175 a month. That's the work we did. Marylanders wanted to see leaders who did the hard work, took on the problems, even the problems that arose.
Sir, your time
is... And got the job done.
Delegate Mazir.
Professionally, I'm a healthcare policy analyst. I worked on Capitol Hill for nearly a decade working on healthcare policy issues. And I've always believed that healthcare is a right, not a privilege. And I am a strong supporter of the Affordable Care Act because for years I had been working to try to get some of those very same provisions passed here in Maryland. The first piece of legislation that I got to sign into law was a bill that allows young adults to remain on their family's health plan through age 25. It's now federal law because we were able to show how it worked in Maryland first. And in each of these instances, whether it was finding a unique way to enroll 50,000 more children in health insurance through my Kids First initiative, or working across the aisle to come up with a bipartisan solution to give 35,000 more women in our state access to free family planning. In each and every instance, I learned that the most important thing wasn't just passing the law. It was to make sure that we got it implemented correctly, that the unglamorous side of governing was just as important. Our ideas and our vision matter in this election, but our track record of implementing laws successfully matters more. I'm the governor that will make sure that we get this right. Healthcare should be a right for everyone, not a privilege, and under a Mazur administration, we'll get it done.
I have the ability to ask periodic follow-ups here, and I'm going to ask you one, Lieutenant Governor, on this. You talked about your work in straightening out the mess, replacing staff, and deciding to move on. Let me read from an editorial that was in The Sun this morning, which asked some of the big questions remaining for the three of you as candidates. And Mr. Brown, the question was, we still haven't gotten a truly satisfactory answer about what exactly his role was in managing the launch or in making decisions about how to fix things when they went awry. Was he a failed manager, or was the talk of him being the state's point man on health insurance political puffery that went horribly awry? Can you help us understand, maybe on a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is out of the loop, 10 is you were in charge.
Let me describe.
How much in charge were
you? Let me describe my role. Implementing the Affordable Care Act, the big component, of course, was the health benefits exchange. But there's also the Medicaid expansion. There are issues that deal with the workforce and making sure that we have a health provider workforce to do the work. Also, there are questions that we looked at in a work group we put together dealing with the safety net. So as more and more Marylanders get health insurance, there's still going to be some that don't. So I was the chair of the Health Reform Coordinating Council that looked at every one of these aspects. And one of the first things that we did 3 years ago, we sent to the legislature the blueprint for establishing a health benefits exchange. And we established it as an independent government agency. In retrospect, like in Connecticut, I'd go back and say, appoint me as a member of the health benefits exchange, maybe even the chairman of the exchange. But that's not the role that I served. But that doesn't mean that I didn't have a responsibility. I was chair of the Health Reform Coordinating Council. When we got the information that we did, and I didn't get it till after October 1st because I wasn't on the health reform, the health exchange where the information was had. As soon as we got the information, then we brought the exchange in and said, okay, we've got some things that you need to do. Reorganize the leadership, refocus the vendors, get rid of the ones that aren't working. What more resources do you need? So we need more call centers because we're doing more manual workarounds. We need more navigators. And that's what we did. And that's we did a lot of manual workarounds. But the result was to enroll 340,000 Marylanders. These are real Marylanders. You know, this is the senior who's no longer making the choice between prescription drugs and groceries. These are real Marylanders. A lot of manual workarounds.